What if I told you there was a way to solve your biggest practice challenges and connect with a thriving community all in one place? Well, the wait is over. The Best Practices Association app is here. Now available on the Apple Store and Google Play Store, this app is a way to get solutions in the palm of your hands. And the best part? It's 100% free to join. So don't wait. Download the Best Practices Association app now and start transforming the way you practice dentistry. Yo, yo, yo. Hey guys, welcome back to another amazing edition of the Best Practices Show podcast. Thank you for showing up because we're going to keep bringing it. Our job is to bring you the best information to help you improve your practice and your life. And if you're a dentist, you know this is true. You have a gold mine in your practice. It's called your hygiene department. The challenge is someone's got to lead it. Someone's got to think bigger and better in order for that to happen. So we're going to help you with that today. We did a presentation recently called Your Hygiene Department, a Gold Mine for Growth, with some of the amazing ACT Dental coaches. And it was so good, I thought we would share the audio in the podcast. So here it is. Please listen up. Hope you guys enjoy this, and we'll see you soon.
All right, there we are. We're going to be talking about your hygiene department and how important it can really be to growth and profitability for the practice. Before we even get going, we just like to keep the awareness building around the BPA, or Best Practices Association. So you may be viewing this right now in the BPA, because these do broadcast live in the BPA. And then all of these recordings live right there in the BPA space. So in the BPA, you can take advantage of the things that we offer, the programs, resources, educational opportunities, all on your own. Or you can elevate into our To the Top Study Club, where you can work with a group of like-minded professionals and dentists who own their own practice to have a bit more of a support community. And Courtney helps support that community as well. So if you do end up in the To the Top Study Club, you'll see Courtney quite a bit. And then we elevate that next level to our one-on-one pro coaching program. So I was just mentioning that everyone on the call right now either is or has been a pro coach with ACT Dental. And so all of us have quite a bit of experience of what it's like to be one-on-one with clients, team members, dentists who own their own practices, helping to instill some of these things that we're going to talk about today and a lot of the other information that lives right there in our BPA. So if you're not there already, you can easily join us. You can join on your desktop by just going to join.actdental.com. Sign up for a free account. With the free account, again, you get access to the recordings of webinars just like this and masterclasses, or you can elevate to our premium, our team levels, and also have access to discussion forums, role specific even. So I mentioned Caitlin, who's on today, is in our office manager group in our office manager study club. So you have access to our hygiene forum and our hygiene study club for any of the hygienists that are on today. And then there's the QR code there too. If you just want to scan that, you can get this on your mobile phone via your app store. Just hop in and search Best Practices Association and you can find us there. So right off the jump, everyone always asks, will I be able to see these slides later and will it be recorded? Yes. And you can find it right there in the BPA. Today, we're talking about your hygiene department being a gold mine for growth, and we're going to talk about three different aspects of what to consider around that hygiene department to make sure that we're really maximizing what hygiene can do for the practice. And we always like to start with why and just what's important about this topic. If you want to be able to sustain growth, if you want to be able to expand and develop growth over time in your practice, you really, great place to start is your hygiene department. We're going to talk a little bit about how patients are tethered to the practice through the hygiene department. We're also going to talk a little bit about how to elevate those standards of care that we provide as a hygiene team. And so as we work through this webinar today, we'll tackle a couple of ways in which the hygiene department is going to function as more than just this preventative care, you know, prophies and exams and out the door they go. But how can the hygiene department become the heartbeat of that loyalty and clinical opportunity? How can the hygienist function as a collaborative, restorative partner with the dentist so that we're able to help more patients receive the care that they really need and want? So when we look at this topic of hygiene being a goldmine for growth, the big factors to think about are, again, that continuity of care. It really drives retention. When we think about active patients, one of the biggest things that people freak out about is those holes in the schedule. So when we think about retention, keeping our schedules full, making sure that we're supporting the customized program of health that we're all putting in front of each of our patients, it really boils down to that continuity of care. When patients come back for hygiene more than any other service, sometimes they even see us more often than, you know, a primary care physician. So it's really important to make sure that we're doing our best to build that loyalty and maintain connection. Actually, all of us on the call right now, because I don't see Ariel's joined us yet, have all been hygienists. Well, technically we all are hygienists, right? we're just not sitting chair side anymore. So we've been there in that chair. The other piece is predictable revenue stream. So we do have to think about hygiene as a business within the business. And the hygiene department is a revenue stream. We're producers, just like the doctors in the practice are. And so hygiene provides that recurring, stable revenue and a consistent opportunity to identify treatment needs and help, again, collaborate on what those restorative needs of our patients might be alongside of their periodontal health. Hygienists as growth catalysts, when we empower our hygienists to become patient advocates, education partners, I like this term of like clinical co-pilots, like working together as a department with the other hygienists in our practice and with the doctor, we can do so much more for the practice and for our patients. We're not just tooth scrapers. I've heard the term mouth janitors over the years. And I'm like, yeah, I am not a mouth janitor. I'm just not in there cleaning things up. We're doing so much more than that as hygienists, and we can provide so much more value to the practice. So I want you to just imagine for a minute. I always like to think about like, how does this topic show up in the practice? So think about it. One practice trained their hygiene team and developed their hygiene team to use intraoral photos, present findings confidently, discuss whole body health. You know, we have a lot of dentists in our community who build in sleep therapy and systemic health. The doctor supports the recommendations of the hygienist. The daily reality in that practice is that hygienists lead meaningful conversations. They have treatment acceptance that starts in the hygiene chair. Patients trust the team deeply. They say yes more often to same-day dentistry and scheduling right then and there. The objections decrease and the acceptance increase in a practice like that versus a practice that relies on hygienists to just clean and pass it off to the doc. I've heard it many times where the doctor's like, I don't even need you in the room for the exam, like on to the next one. And there's so much missed opportunity when we don't have that collaboration. There's no empowerment or ownership. The team misses signs of perio, perhaps early decay, occlusal wear. Patients might delay treatment or not even be aware of treatment needs. Conditions might worsen. And the practices become known for being a bit more reactive than proactive. Another scenario to imagine, and I want you to be thinking about these as you kind of imagine them with us in terms of like, where do I fall right now? Am I somewhere in the middle? Am I leaning towards one side or the other? One practice who's shifted to block scheduling to make sure that there is space for periodontal therapy and having those SRP reevaluations in a timely manner. They're linking hygiene goals to overall practice performance. In this practice, hygienists work smarter, not harder. They're recognized to be critical to the bottom line. Hygiene alone is accounting for 30% or more of the practice production, and the practice is growing without having to add more chairs, more providers. We're able to build on the service mix that we have already in our hours built in. Now, versus the alternative of that, which would be the other practice that still views hygiene as a loss leader, low fees, high volume, that rinse and repeat. You know, we've heard that phrase prophy mill over the years. And how do we get out of that? Hygienists are burnout. no time for value-added services in a practice like that. I've worked in practice before where I'm like, we don't have time for questions today, patient. No. Like, we're in a hurry. No time for that. And the outcome in a practice like that is just stagnancy, stagnant revenue, stagnant growth as a provider. Maybe we're not feeling fulfilled. There might be misdiagnosis or missed opportunity every hour on the hour. And so when you think about these different types of practices, you know, practice number one is going to be met for that gold mine for growth. And practice number two is leaving a lot left on the table. So we're going to talk about three different aspects in which this opportunity can really build and grow within your practice and within your hygiene department. So a really important thing to remember is that hygiene is where patients are tethered to your practice. And we love that word tethered because it's not like they're, you know, we're holding them hostage, but they've got this connection to our practice through the hygiene team. Again, they see us sometimes more than even their primary care physician. So hygiene appointments are where that treatment is generated. So when we're thinking about, you know, I'm a dentist, I'm a practice owner, and I have a light schedule ahead of me, and I'm frustrated or I'm a little anxious every time I get called in for an exam, we have to remember that these exam opportunities, when these patients are in our hygiene schedule, that's where our treatment's generated. That periodic exam is really that main source of our future restorative production, aside from our new patients coming in. And so we want to make sure that patients are tethered to our hygiene schedule. So actions to consider around that: hygiene reappointment. It's really, really important to have a default system or communication where everyone knows that what we do when an appointment ends is we schedule their next visit for hygiene, right? To maintain that value, keep the patients returning, keep that patient flow and the patient's health consistent. We really want to make sure that every patient leaves from the hygiene schedule with their next appointment scheduled. And if we have a benchmark, you can measure this statistic. You can do it manually, or if you have like Dental Intel or a practice management analytics software, you really want more than 90%, if not even, I a lot of times set my teams around 94%. Coaches can share some insights on this in just a minute. We just want to make sure that the majority of patients, the vast majority are pre-scheduled for their next hygiene visit before they walk out the door. It's that much harder to recapture them if not. When we're rescheduling that next visit, the other action to consider is around building value in that visit. It's really important to communicate how much that next visit matters. When we use that value building language right now to imply commitment, like we're reserving time for you, Mrs. Jones, it's a lot different than like, you know, I'm going to pencil you in. If anything changes when it gets closer, just let us know. We can move things around if you need us to. That's a lot different than it's really important that we reserve this next visit, Mrs. Jones, so we can keep making sure that the maintenance and the gains that we've gotten through your treatment stay on course. That patient's much more likely to schedule right now and keep that next appointment if we've used that value building language that feels like commitment when we're scheduling the next visit. So we talked about hygiene reappointment, using value building language when we do that. And the last action to consider around this hygiene retention piece before we're going to jump into coaches sharing a little insight on these factors is the hygiene recare follow-up system. This vastly impacts retention as well because, you know, sometimes patients do slip through the cracks. Maybe they do have a wonky schedule or they're in college or they're a snowbird or maybe they did call, they pre-scheduled, but then they called and had to cancel and they weren't able to reschedule right away. So we do need to have a really consistent follow-up system, a plan in place, someone who owns that system, who's consistently implementing follow-up calls, follow-up texts, contact, personalized contact with patients who aren't pre-scheduled for their next hygiene visit to try to reintroduce them to the schedule. And so these three key actions are great ways for us to help, again, tether those hygiene patients to the practice and help with growth over time. So hygiene reappointment, just ensuring that every patient is scheduled for their next hygiene visit before they leave. Again, aiming for that 90% or higher rate of pre-appointment. We want to look at making sure we're using value building, commitment sounding language when we make those next visits. And then lastly, when someone slips through the cracks, making sure we have a consistent system that somebody owns in the practice so that we're following up on those ReCare patients on a regular basis. So what I'd like to do is take those three ideas around how we tether hygiene to the practice through reappointment, value building, and ReCare follow-up, and just like chat with the coaches for a minute. Oh, and Ariel's here. I didn't see you because I was sharing screen. You look so pretty today. So I would love for you guys to share a little insight on, you know, if there's pieces of this that you have best tips for, or where you feel like the greatest impact might be, maybe even just a story or a team that's been really successful at implementing any of these things. So yeah, let's just open it up for just a couple minutes.
I'll start.
You were going to be the one.
As long as I could. I was actually talking to a client yesterday about the building value for the next appointment, right? So one of the things that we talked about was always creating some kind of urgency or some kind of value for that next appointment. It's not just, oh, you're due in 6 months to come back. Like, what is it that we're going to look at? Are we going to look at that tooth on the upper right that had, a fracture, or there was bleeding, or I gave you some instruction on how to help that and help to fix, you know, clean up the tissue, make it a little bit more healthy. So we're going to check that next time. And then taking it one step further, and I recommended to this client, is to edit the template in the notes to put RFR, reason for return, and then write that out. Because what they're also implementing is if a patient calls and they need to change their appointment, the admin team can quickly look at the notes and see, oh, well, I thought that Christina was going to check this on the upper right for you when you came back in. I really would hate for you to miss that opportunity for her to do that. So I think building that value again is always showing that there is a reason for you to return. It's not just that it's been 6 months and it's time to get your teeth cleaned again.
Yeah, I think that term, like, you're due for, or you'll be due again, is probably the most common thing that you hear. Like, you're going to be due again in 6 months, so let's get something on the books, versus like, what is the outcome that we're trying to continue to support with that next visit? I'm like, who else wants to jump in? Ariel looks eager.
I always agree, right? And when you say like you're due for, I'm like, I'm due for what? What am I due for? Right? And I don't know if I should admit this, but my last hygiene appointment was my first time I didn't get away with not flossing. And I had known, I was like, I haven't been doing very well. And she told me my periocharting numbers. And I told her, I created my own reason. And I was like, all right, I had 3 4s. Next time I'm having 0. And she's like, it's not that bad, right? Like, trying to make me feel better. But that's my reason for a return, so that I can prove to her that I did listen. But I also,
go ahead.
Was gonna say is to really track it too, to see in that aspect for that reappointment rate is, right, we all feel like we do a really good job. And most of us do. But there are those weeks that, like you said, mm-hmm. is like, oh, Ariel always schedules. Why did she not? Right. And I would rather give her a call that week, or right, to say like, hey, you know, I noticed that you didn't schedule, right? Did you have a chance to look at your calendar? So that way I can keep you on track, versus, right, of, oh, well, she'll give us a call. And when she does, especially with the teams that are booked out a ways, right, and we are scheduled at capacity, now I call and now I'm disappointed because I'm actually 9 months past due.
Due for what?
That's my reason for return then. I was like, now I'm going to have more 4s, so I want to stay on track.
That's a great point too, because when we say, you know, stay on track, I like to say, like, you know, your program of care, like, you have a customized program of care. We need to see you every 3 months. And this, you know, we talked about, these are the reasons why. And if you're a practice that has a high level of emergency visits, like, I would probably guess that maybe perhaps your reappointment rate is a little bit lower as well. And so, like you said, Ariel, like, somebody who might otherwise be seen every 3 4 or 6 months for a periodic exam, if they're only doing that every 9 months or a year and a half when they remember to call because something's bothering them, we're probably going to be seeing more limited problem-focused type treatment versus being able to be a little bit more proactive and preventative with their care.
In the example that Ariel used, her hygienist, it sounded like, obviously I wasn't there, but it sounded like her hygienist was already minimizing what she had heard. So, you know, Ariel's already more concerned about her own gums than the hygienist is. So I think we just have to remember that too, like the language that we use, you know, if patients do actually get it and it, you know, whether it's a cracked tooth or a perio chart or whatever it is, like once patients understand, like then it does matter to them. And then we have to like, remember that we can use that language as well. Same thing in the front. It's not just a cleaning. It's not just your checkup. It is for all those reasons that are health impacting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I noted that too, the minimizing language. And a lot of our patients, they know more than we think they do. Like they know that a four isn't, it's maybe it's not that bad, but we can create some urgency around ways to improve it. And I also really loved, Ariel, your system around getting patients to schedule when they don't know, I don't have my calendar. I don't know what my schedule will be. Give them a little bit of time and then have the provider, we as the hygienist, or assign someone to be really intentional about calling them at the end of that week and leaning into, we want you to make sure that you have your future appointment so that, and then whatever that reason to return is. That's a really great way to keep your recare system clean and ensure that you recapture those patients for their future appointment. Keep them on track.
Well, that's a good segue too into the last piece. And we'll talk on that for the recare system piece for just a minute before we jump into the next segment. So I notice, and I'm curious if you guys notice this too, a lot of teams that I talk to or work with, they use the hygiene recare system a little bit more like a quick fill list. You know, when there's a hole in the schedule, I'll call, you know, our overdue hygiene patients versus consistently having it part of their weekly checklist where they're calling on a regular basis to help keep fostering those connections. So I'm curious from you guys, if anybody wants to share just a best practice, do you have your teams build it into a weekly checklist or a daily checklist? Like what's the best way for an administrative team to start consistently working a recare system instead of using it kind of as that backup plan when we end up with a hole in the schedule?
I would say the easiest thing that was for me administratively is to create a schedule. So I'm like, okay, it's June. I know that in June, I'm going to run this report. And I actually did it two ways, right? I did, okay, I know that people are coming who are coming up to be due, and then who are, let's say, 9 months, right? So it's kind of a reactivation as well. Get those lists, have them either, I was like, I'm anti-printing, but have them on an Excel sheet, or if you print them, that's okay, right? So that way it's not just me, but it's whoever has time to call them. Because I always tell my team too, is it can be a quick fill list. And if we're making those calls, eventually they're going to call back. And now, oh yeah, absolutely. We had a change in our schedule for this. So it's still being proactive in a quick fill. We just don't know that, right? Versus reactive, oh, we have an opening, let me call and just hope that it works with their schedule, right? I want more patients calling in so that I can fill them in as we do get those changes in the schedule.
Yeah, I feel like you made a great point right there too. You kind of slid it in as like, it doesn't just have to be the administrative team member. When I was a hygienist, if I had a cancellation and I, you know, my room was set up and I had finished that last note, I make a round, anybody need help with perio charting, and then on my way to the recall room so that I could pick up that list. And I am old, so we did use paper. We had a stamp in the charts to indicate what we did that day. But we would use paper lists and I would help call, you know, overdue patients, or like you said, dividing it up into segments of coming up. And then I also love the idea of running that 18-month list where it's people who are about to shift to inactive status and making sure that we're doing that one last kind of point of contact there as well. And so you can use it as dual purpose. Yes, you can use it when you're trying to fill those short notice changes in the schedule, but also, you know, we've had opportunities and you have a program of care. And like Chris said earlier, if there's a note in there, even better, about what their goal is for their health or what it is that their hygienist noticed or was watching, then we can build that into that phone conversation or into that communication via email, or sometimes even just those text sequences that we send out. We can kind of customize those a little bit more to patients. So awesome. Great, ladies. That's fun. I'm like, I kind of want to just keep chatting, but we're going to keep it on structure. We're going to go back to the next segment. So I'm going to share screen again for just a minute. And in this section of our webinar today, we're going to talk about upholding optimal standards of care. So while it's really important to make sure that we have patients tethered to the practice, it's also really important to make sure that we're aligned around what are the optimal ways in which we treat patients here in our practice. So most practices have a philosophy around the type of care that they provide, restoratively as well as from a hygiene standpoint. It may be documented. It may not be yet. That's okay. When we work with our clients, we try to encourage them to document and align around what does it mean for us to practice hygiene here in this practice, and then develop out our standards of care, but not just the standard, because that's kind of like the average bar, but what is that optimal standard of care? And when we think about that term, we're thinking of the highest level of clinical care that your practice can commit to providing on a current basis to your patients. We're looking at what are best practices, what innovations have come around that we should be considering, what does clinical evidence tell us? I say all the time, I graduated in 2003 with my hygiene license. And if I was still doing everything exactly the way I learned it in 2003, I'd really be doing my patients a disservice if I was sitting chairside, because so much has changed in the last 20 years. And so we need to be using that clinical evidence, innovation, our professional judgment, and building that philosophy and alignment of how are we going to make sure that we're always going above and beyond those minimum legal or regulatory requirements of how we take care of patients. It's going to be a big piece of how you can differentiate your hygiene department and your practice from other practices in your area. When you have a new patient that comes to your office and you're delivering these consistent, optimal standards of care, they're going to notice it if that wasn't happening wherever they were before. And they're going to automatically consider your practice at a higher value, and using those ethics and moral judgments to make sure that we're doing things that are right for each patient. So we want to align as a team on what those are and document them so that the patient experience is consistently supported throughout their experience, no matter the provider they see, no matter when they come in. We're updating, we're revising, and we're aligning around this documented system of those optimal standards of care. So things that you should consider when you're thinking about your standards of care in your practice. I think the first and most important thing to consider is that our optimal standards of care are not guided by insurance limitations and frequencies and due dates. A lot of times when we start talking about processes like this in our practice, the teams will lean into, well, we do an FMX every 5 years. Okay, why do you do an FMX? Well, that's when most insurances cover it. Or, you know, we only provide fluoride if they're under 18, because most insurances don't pay for it, you know, over 18 or something to that effect. We want to make sure that we're always remembering that yes, it's important for us to be able to be the liaison for and support and do the legwork around maximizing the benefits that our patients have at their disposal, but always making our clinical judgments based on that evidence and ethics that we know to be true and best for our patients. So optimal standards of care should not be guided by insurance, but they should include things like the reason for that particular type of procedure or care, frequencies based on what we're seeing and customizing per patient, individualizing those frequencies at times. Like, what are the risk factors of the person in my chair, and how is that going to guide when I'm making these recommendations versus the due date, like we were kind of talking about before? Ages, stages of disease, whether it be caries or whether it be periodontal, perhaps even functional stages of wear. Just looking at those risk factors, systemic factors, and how does all of that play into when and how we make particular recommendations about treatment? So some of the things that you might want to consider including in a document in your practice that helps to guide our optimal standards of care would be panoramic radiographs or full mouth radiographs. I was actually just talking with one of my clients not too long ago. They've always done a panoramic and four bite wings. And he's been doing a lot of research that a lot of people are starting to lean more towards a full mouth series at a new patient visit. And rather than just kind of picking or choosing, he really did his due diligence to dig in to the evidence, read some research on both sides of what the different radiographs provide, and not just do what they've always done, but create a new plan for their standards of care around those comprehensive radiographs. Looking at horizontal bite wings versus vertical bite wings, do you take vertical bite wings? If so, when would you elect to do so versus horizontal? Sealants, fluoride varnish, SDF, intraoral photos, scans, 6-point periodontal charting. I think it's great to really map out the details around full mouth periocharting and what your team is measuring and how frequently. What about blood pressure, medical histories, getting that systemic component built in? Coronal polishing, oral hygiene instruction, even laser care. A lot of practices are implementing that now. So this certainly isn't the whole list of things that you might have in your practice. You might have some of this, you might have all of this and more, but really looking at those procedures that we're providing in our hygiene department and deciding together who's doing them, how frequently, why, and what risk factors would really warrant us moving forward with that type of care. So I'm going to jump back into discussion time with our coaches. And I'd love to hear from the coaches around teams that you've worked with who have developed some standards of care. I just shared that experience around panoramic and four bite wings versus FMX. And how did we guide him to think about like, well, don't, you know, make the decision off of clinical evidence and then what feels right for your philosophy. So I'd love for you guys to share if you've had an experience or best practice around that piece. Oh, Ange just threw something in the chat. Maybe answering the question.
Yeah, I was just responding to Caitlin's question. I think Ariel did too.
I don't know if, okay, it looks like it does go. When I'm looking at those responses, it says to the host and the panelists. So I just want to make sure that the people in the chat are seeing them as well. So that's good. Looks like they are.
I did open up the chat to everyone. So when if you're making a post and the little blue thing above where you're entering in the chat, if it says hosts and panelists, you can click on that to where it says everyone if you want it to go to everybody.
Whoops, thanks.
Yeah. All right. So any of you guys have any thoughts on optimal standards of care and how to make that impactful and effective in the practice? Chris is like, I'm going to try to be quiet and let somebody else go. You don't have to, Chris. You can go.
All right. I mean, obviously, this is a great topic for a team meeting. If you're having a team meeting or you're breaking out into departmental meetings, I think it's awesome for the entire team to be aligned around what this means. And sometimes we think that this only needs to be happening in the hygiene department, but it doesn't, because the entire team needs to understand the why and why it's valuable, because you want that consistency of message across the entire team. Plus, it's always good to have the doctor collaborate on that as well. Mm-hmm. So just understanding what do we all believe about the optimal standards of care? What does it take to have our hygiene department be as healthy as possible, not just like healthy from a team, from a patient perspective, but from a business perspective. As we said, we are part of the business. We're providers. Mm-hmm. We have a responsibility to that. So I think everybody aligning on what it is that we agree as an entire practice, and then writing it down, having the guidelines, the standards, so that we can, just treat the patients as consistently as possible.
You know, I often use the example when I'm talking with teams about if you have two new patients that come in, a husband and a wife, and they're going to ride home together in the car after their visit, and they're going to talk about their experiences. And if they have two very different experiences, because we're not aligned as providers, you know, me as a hygienist and, you know, maybe Chris, who's working right next to me in the next operatory, that's going to show up. It's going to be a little bit like, well, that's weird. Your hygienist did that. Mine didn't do that. Yours is having you do this. And you went home with that toothpaste. Mine didn't even mention a toothpaste. Now, mind you, we might be making different recommendations because the individual risk factors or things that we're seeing are different. But if we are consistently providing that same level of care, it's going to show up over and over, regardless of who someone sees. And I'm curious if anybody's used this, any of you guys have used this, and what the impact is on having something like this documented when onboarding new team members.
I would say for when you have it documented, like you said, the onboarding becomes easier, right? Helping set expectations for the team members. But I was also leaning towards for the patients too, of helping elevate our patients, right? So if we have a team saying, oh, our patients, they don't want that, or they don't want this. And I'm like, well, maybe they do. They just haven't been offered it, right? Or we're assuming that they don't, right? So if we want a higher level patient base, right, we need to start with those, you know, optimal standards of care and letting them know, why are we different, right? Oh, my last dentist, they didn't do that. Or my last office didn't do this, right? It gives everyone the confidence and be like, you know, I apologize that you didn't get that care. I'm so glad that you're here. And this is something that you can expect from us on a regular basis. It just really helps everyone speak with confidence, especially those new team members that are like, well, I'm not really sure. And it's like, no, this is our process. It's right here. Right? Like you have that confidence that you tell a patient, and then if they text the doctor behind your back, right, you're going to get that same support.
Ariel, you say that like you've experienced that before.
No, some patients never do that.
I just want to add to that, that, you know, sometimes we're not doing the standard of care. Sometimes we're doing our optimal care, except the patient doesn't even know that we're doing optimal care because we haven't let them know. We're periocharting and writing it down and not talking to them about it. We're doing an oral cancer screening and we're not mentioning it. So if we're going to do the optimal care, then they can't really value it unless they know it also.
That's such a great point. I was just talking with Pain Free, the marketing company that we often work with a lot of our clients. And we were talking about internal marketing strategies. And one of the things that we don't really think about as internal marketing is how we talk about our own selves during the experience. The value that we build during that experience is, in fact, generating like a brand awareness for our patients. And it's helping them to understand the value that these certain procedures are providing them specifically. You guys know I love using the word so that and taking like so that and putting it in front of any recommendation that we're making to the patient so that they can understand why we're making that recommendation, not just because it's what we're supposed to do. We just do fluoride at the end of the appointment. This is what we do. No, like why for me specifically are you making that recommendation? And I think that that's the other thing to think about is when we are creating these optimal standards of care, it's going to be a document that's in general, this is when we would do this. This is how we would provide that. This is why. But we do also want to leave room for, again, those individual risk factors that we're seeing in our patients. So when I think about fluoride, if somebody says our optimal standard of care is that we provide a preventative fluoride varnish for all of our patients at the end of the visit, you know, asterisk, C carries risk assessment system, right? So that we're actually kind of grading and gauging how important it would be for each of those people to truly have that. Same thing with radiographs. Somebody might need radiographs every 6 months, and it's kind of that caveat to our annual radiographs that we take because they have a really high risk for decay. And maybe somebody else is fine at a year or 18 months because they've never had a cavity in their life and they're 55 years old. So there does have to be a little bit of gray, but it's really important to have kind of those buoys and boundaries for people to work within and around consistently. Otherwise, anything from you, Courtney, before we jump on to the next piece?
Yeah, I think having those, I like that you said buoys and boundaries, but I think having those really clear, like this is who we are, this is how we operate, this is why, this is what we stand for, allows your team to remove their own limiting beliefs that, well, they're, people aren't going to take this, or maybe someone's not going to want this, so that we can kind of stand on our soapbox and say, yes, this is the standard of care. And this is why this is going to be so powerful for you. It, it just, it makes it really clear for us and for our patients.
Yeah. And sweet.
I'm not going to say it doesn't matter, but the patient has that option to say no. They always have the option to say no, but that doesn't mean that we should cater what we offer them. We are clinicians, we're providers, we're professionals. And so that's our role, is to tell the patient what we are seeing and give them the recommendation. And they always have the option to say no, but I don't want to preempt that by saying, oh, they're going to say no. Just do what you know you need to do and give them that option.
Yeah, just, they come to us because we're the experts. They want us to provide the service for them. And it's, I think it's our responsibility to provide them all the information that they may need to make a really well-informed, well-educated decision for themselves about what they feel is appropriate. But if we don't provide that information or those options, how do they even know? Right. So I do agree. Like, we have to put it out there and make sure they understand the value. And then, yeah, of course you can say no, like you bodily autonomy and all of that jazz, but it's really important for us to make sure, because they don't know what we know. They haven't been to school. They haven't learned the things that we've learned. They don't sit on dental webinars to learn the latest information. They're relying on us as their providers and the experts in that realm to be able to guide them and then them make those really informed decisions. So speaking of making well-informed decisions, we're going to go into the last piece, which is hygienists being the restorative partners and collaborating through the handoff, through that exam process, to make sure that we're doing everything we can for patients to get and accept the treatment that they want and need. So thinking about hygienists as restorative partners, and this is a really great opportunity to, again, improve growth within the practice, not only for the practice's production and schedule efficiency, but also, again, so that patients are receiving that care on a more consistent basis and understanding the need. So oftentimes hygienists spend the most time with the patient. You know, we're with them for 45, 50 minutes. The doctor's in there for 5 or 10. So we are the front line, the hygiene team, for helping to identify those early needs and reinforcing the doctor's recommendations. So when a patient sits down in our chair, we should already know what was recommended last time and why. Did they move forward or not? Were they referred? Did they go? Why were they referred? So that we can follow up on those conversations. I love just leading in with, you know, what's your understanding of what Dr. So-and-so recommended last time you were here on that upper right? And they're either going to look at you like a deer in the headlights. They don't even remember what you're talking about, or they've thought it through and they already kind of know where they're at with that. The other piece of it is, when we are in their mouth providing those hygiene services for the bulk of that entire hour, we're also just looking at and seeing and recognizing some of the functional and bacterial things that may be impacting health risk. So I think it's a great idea to empower hygienists to, I say, co-diagnose, co-discovery, probably more, a little more the co-discovery side than the diagnosis side. Again, legally and ethically, hygienists aren't allowed to make diagnosis without a doctor, except for our friend who's in Turks and Caicos with her independent dental hygiene practice on the webinar today. Ariel, you might have missed that at the beginning. Turks and Caicos, one of the 5 hygienists licensed in the country. Pretty amazing. She's here with us today. So yeah, developing your hygienist to recognize those early signs of disease. And when I say disease, I compartmentalize that to functional and bacterial disease. So you might have periodontal bacterial disease, but you also might have functional periodontal impact, right? Because we can lose some of our periodontium relative to wear and function as well. And restoratively, we might have bacterial deterioration, or we might have that occlusal or wear or functional deterioration. So as a dentist and practice owner, if you have the ability and knowledge to develop your hygienist to be able to see and understand and recognize the way that you see and understand and recognize these things in patients, it's going to set the hygienist up for success to be able to preempt the patient, kind of point out some things that the doctor might mention this. I'm seeing some signs of that here. Let me take a picture. Otherwise, your hygienist is looking at, you know, gums and bone. And that's our area. That's where we're living, you know, blinders on. And there is a lot of opportunity for hygienists to be that first line of sight, that first planting of the seed around some of these other concepts. So allowing them to use language that helps not diagnose, but educate or bring awareness so that when the doctor comes in for the exam, the patient's already thinking like, okay, there's something going on here. I've seen it now. She took a picture. We looked at it together. The doctor is going to now, you know, share with me what the recommendations are. So just a little phrase I have there, just like, I'm seeing some signs of concern on, you know, this tooth, Mrs. Jones, Dr. Smith is going to want to take a look. I'm going to go ahead and take an image so we can see it together before he comes in to do your exam. A lot of times in this situation, you know, we're looking at the picture. A lot of times in this situation, Dr. Smith is going to recommend like a full coverage restoration, like a crown. So I just want you to be prepared. That might be something that comes up today in your exam. So that mindset is already moving in that direction. They've already seen the pictures. They've seen the cracks and the blue and gray lines around that old filling. And it's not a surprise. And the doctor has 2 minutes to like bring it all to their attention and seal the deal. The other thing to think about is using handoffs and follow-up questions to help support the transfer of the information that we have seen in the hygiene chair to the doctor, because again, they have a limited amount of time. So if we can help the doctor to be aware of what we've already covered and what we've already seen, and they know exactly where to pick up, that handoff is essential. And a really key piece of the handoff is making sure the patient is part of it. It's a three-person conversation when the doctor comes in the room for the exam. We're all able to see each other, look at each other in the eyes, and share this information of what we've learned together. So, you know, Dr. Smith, Jane and I looked today together at number 14, that tooth on the upper left, right? Because she doesn't know what number 14 is. We saw that there's an aging filling there. There's a visible crack on the front side of the tooth. Based on what we saw and this picture I have right here, I let her know that you might recommend a full coverage restoration like a crown. However, we really would love your expert opinion on that today. And now the doctor knows, okay, I'm going to look at everything, but there's this key area that they've already discussed. And to be honest, a lot of doctors are just like we are, a lot of hygienists, we're a little uncomfortable kind of sharing that bad news. So if we've already been set up for success by the hygienist, that the patient is open to hearing this information, the doctor is going to be more likely to go ahead and deliver that treatment recommendation. And then a great follow-up question when the doctor leaves the room, just what, if anything, would you like clarity on before moving forward with Dr. Smith's recommendation? Because all of us know that as soon as the doctor leaves the room, they're nodding along. Oh, yes, doctor. Oh, yes, doctor. And as soon as the doctor leaves the room is when they have three or four questions about when should I do this? And if it's not bothering me yet, do I have to do it now? And they didn't ask any of those questions, you know, during the exam. So I think it's just a key piece of that growth mindset that as a hygienist, yes, our area of expertise is making sure that we're managing the gum and bone health, the periodontium of the patient. But it's also well within our scope to be able to see and recognize if something else looks as if there is a concern. We might not go as far as diagnosing, and we probably shouldn't, but we certainly can collaborate with the doctor. And I have found for myself that the greatest growth that I have learned is working with dentists that were open to teaching me. You know, when they see something, being open to me saying, like, I'm really curious, like what you saw, because I would, you know, I didn't see it and I'd love to learn. Or the doctors that will present case studies during a team meeting and help the team to think the way that they think through those treatment plans. So we're just going to open it up a little bit here to the coaches, our final little coach discussion before we open it up for questions and answers. I'm curious if any of you who have been hygienists have had the opportunity to work on teams where you were collaborative in that way, maybe even sharing a little bit around the benefits of a handoff or teams that have incorporated or built handoffs into their system that didn't have them before and what success they saw on the other side of that. So we're going to take it away and see if Chris jumps in first.
I'll take it from Chris. Thank you, Courtney.
I was going to say, are we supposed to? I don't even know what to do.
I loved being able to like preheat the patient. And my tagline was always, I'm not the doctor. I can't diagnose you. And I am very confident that ABC is going to happen. And I always used, you know, actionable words, cracking, breaking, bleeding, because it's happening right now. And it is. I don't know when it's going to stop. I don't know that this is the worst it's going to ever be. So being able to take your photos and sit the patient up and speak with them and tell them what's going on. And then when the doctor comes in the room, just share all of that information with the doctor so that they can, once you have that rhythm with them, they'll very easily come in and be like, absolutely, let's look at this. Yep, she's right. She's right. Or he's right. Whoever's right. And it just, they built so much value that the patient sees because we, the hygienist and your doctor, are so in sync and so aligned that it's a very powerful thing to the patient. I loved being able to do that. I don't know how teams could operate without doing that. I would never leave the room once the doctor came in. I have too much to say.
Yeah. I think that when you're first starting out in an office, or if you're not there yet, you first need to have a conversation as a hygiene and doctor department, like as a clinical department, and kind of like set that expectation from the beginning. Because I'm a hygienist. I graduated from hygiene school. I was not taught to look at the teeth at all. Like I literally thought my biggest job and most important job was getting off 100% of the plaque and calculus that I was going to use disclosing solution on all my patients, right? But you mentioned, Miranda, growth mindset. And, you know, I think that there's kind of that shift in like, what's the most important thing that I can do for my patient today? And that might not be just focusing on plaque and calculus. You know, that might be focusing on some of these other conversations. And so just aligning first with the doctor and the hygienist, like this is the way that we're going to talk to patients. This is okay to do this handoff because, you know, when I first graduated, I was 21 years old. I didn't know I was supposed to do that. And I wasn't going to go to my older doctor and ask because I didn't even know, you know, so he would have had to tell me, this is what I expect from you. Otherwise, I was going to have no idea. So just getting on the same page.
Angela, I love that you just said that because it goes both ways. Doctors sometimes are afraid to hire new hygienists. I'm not going to use young because not everyone that's a new graduate is young, but new hygienists because of these factors. Like they need someone who's going to be a collaborative partner in that way. And they have an expectation in their mind that maybe they didn't speak out loud to a new graduate at one point. And so they didn't get that from them. And now they're like, I don't like new grads. I need someone with experience. But sometimes it's just a matter of having that conversation right from the beginning. Hey, doctor, you know, what are you expecting of me? And then vice versa. Here's what I expect. I want to be able to give a handoff because I think it's just an important way for us to connect around the patient. So right from the jump, having really clear conversations around practice philosophy and expectations can be like hugely beneficial.
I have one tip that can help that conversation as far as like treatment acceptance and being able to communicate to the patient exactly what's happening and what could happen if they don't do the treatment. And that's what we call exam on demand. So don't wait until the end of the hygiene appointment. Now, obviously, get in line, aligned with the doctor that this is okay. But I loved when my doctor would come in when I was finished with all the diagnostics. Even if I hadn't even picked up a scaler, it was totally fine because I knew what I needed to communicate to her. Because once we agreed and I had the photos and we agreed, yes, tooth number 14 is definitely going to need a full coverage crown. I had the rest of my appointment to talk to the patient and answer questions. And it wasn't like it was 3 minutes to 12. And my next patient was showing up and now the patient has all these questions about the crown and I just don't have time. So really consider restructuring your hygiene visit so that you're you can get all your diagnostics done, get your intraoral photos, get your perio chart, your radiographs, and then have the doctor come in and do the exam at that point. They don't need to necessarily be in a squeaky clean mouth, right?
Yeah. Sometimes well, I think the concept used to be that they were checking our, you know, checking the work of the hygienist, right. And that's right. Kind of gone out the window at this point. And we can appreciate hygienist skills and abilities. And that's really not what that exam is for. And so you're exactly right. Right after that diagnostic, usually the first like 20 minutes, you have enough diagnostic information. Now that's 40 minutes of appointment time in most practices when you have an hour where you can, like you said, be completing everything else that needs to happen, but managing all of the questions. And sometimes it's 15 minutes later before they have the question, because now they've had time to process and think through what the doctor recommended. Because we're getting close on time, I want to tie in, we have Ariel on, who's admin, not hygienist today, but the handoff piece, I mentioned it in the clinical op and how it can be so helpful to do that handoff from the hygienist to the doctor. But Ariel, maybe share from your experience from the hygienist to the administrative team member when they're coming to leave from that visit. How important is that handoff from that side of things when that hygienist brings you a really strong, clear handoff of like what we did today and what we're doing next?
I mean, if the goal is to help your patients get healthy, right, that's how we're going to do it, is by that handoff. Because if you don't believe me, the walk of amnesia is real, and it can be 2 steps. It can be 200 steps. It doesn't matter, right? You take off their bib and you let them walk out the door, they forget it all, right? So that handoff really does help. And let's be honest, our patients trust our hygienists way more than they trust the doctors. Sorry, doctors. It's just true. And when I had that handoff, the patient would continue that conversation like, yeah, Angela, can you believe she found this? And she says, I need to get this crown. And I'm like, yeah, you better keep those hygiene appointments, right? And it just really kept that conversation. And the scheduling was just so much easier, like collecting, right? All of it. It was like, oh, thank you. Verse, right? Not having that. It's like, well, I don't really need that. Or the doctor said I needed this. But anytime the hygienist had that conversation, I'm telling you, the patient was like, well, if Courtney said I got to do it, then I got to do it. And it's like,
and if for heaven, you know, if they do have an objection, you now have information you wouldn't have had otherwise to be able to follow up with. If it was just like drop a router and run, like, I have no idea why you need that or what they're even talking about. Cause no one said anything to me when they came up front today.
Right. Then I'm just speaking with my own confidence. Like, well, I'm sure you do need it. Right. But it's like, oh, I just heard the same thing that you heard. Mm. Oh, but, and you can just, it really shows that unified team.
I love it. I'm so proud of us. Number one, it's 2:59. We crushed it. I was like, there's so many of us on, and how are we going to all want to share and stay on time? So go us. Yay. So much chat happening, and I haven't been able to read all of it. So I do want to just make sure, are there any lingering questions? I saw you guys were answering some of them during. Anything that we didn't get to, or does anybody have anything they want to ask before we wrap up? We did put the CE in the chat, and we'll go ahead and plug that in there one more time so that you have those codes. And then I did see someone talk about the recording. Yes, it's going to live in the BPA. If you're not already there, go to join.actdental.com. I think Ange might have added that a minute ago to the chat. Or you can download the app in your Google Play or your Apple Store. I think that's what it's called, Apple Store. Best Practices Association. If you just search Best Practice Association, all this recording and every recording of every clinical masterclass and webinar we've ever done live right there for you in that free basic space. But did we miss anything? I saw Angela looking back. Anybody else? Any questions that we missed? All right. Well, final takeaways. Let me just pull this up one more time. I'll share a couple of final thoughts. And then if anybody else wants to, before we sign off, just things to consider. The hygiene department is the most consistent touch point for patients in the practice. We talked about that's where patients are tethered to the practice. So we don't want to underestimate the influence that the hygiene department really can have on practice growth. And systems matter, and documenting those systems matter. Having these things that we've talked about, that value building language, our recare system, our standards of care, our optimal standards of care, having them documented and everyone aligning around those is really the key, because when everyone works together, the practice improves. And like we've mentioned a couple of times, the most important piece is that patient's health improves. So I'm going to transition here just for anyone that might want to join that BPA to be able to see the recording and ask coaches, any other final takeaways from you guys? Any inspirational thoughts that you just can't resist leaving behind?
That's a lot of pressure.
Like, Chris is like right there. Come on, Chris.
Do it.
My recommendation is, now that you have this information, sit down and talk to your doctor, to your team, and just get the conversation started. Don't let this opportunity go by the wayside. And then all of a sudden it's 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, and you've totally, you know, got back into the routine. Cause I get it. I mean, it is definitely a routine, and we need to break that habit a little bit and start that conversation.
Love it. All right. Awesome. Thanks, guys, for being here with me today. This is super fun. I don't get to hang out with all of you that much. Thanks, Caitlin. Thanks, everybody, for being here. We'll see you next time. In just a couple weeks, we'll be doing another one. See you then.
Yay.
Bye, guys.
Thanks.
Bye. Bye.
So there you have it. Another great episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. And thank you for showing up. I just want to thank you for being here and sharing the good word with your friends. And if you're really enjoying the podcast, could you do me a favor? Could you go to wherever you consume the podcast and just give us a 4 or 5 star review? Here's what that does. It allows us to find other great people like you. I love this profession so much. I'm going to spend the rest of my professional life finding great information so that you can consume it and your friends can consume it, so that you can create a better practice and a better life. So keep spreading the word, and we will see you guys soon. Have a great day, everybody.